You know, again and again, and as I've been playing these songs from Dawes, most of them from the new album, Nothing Is Wrong, I just keep thinking, these guys are so good. We heard in that short set the songs Time Spent in Los Angeles, The Way You Laugh, and then Coming Back to a Man. As we come back to the neighborhood, Dave's Gone By here at UNC Radio, uncradio.com on the internet. And it is 12:02 in the afternoon here, Mountain Time, and we are happy to have with us on the phone in the neighborhood a member of the band Dawes. He is the bass player. His name is Wiley Gelber, and I believe he is with us on the phone. Wiley, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How you doing?
Hey, good morning. Where are you? Where are you calling from on the road?
We are outside the venue in Milwaukee today.
How's the weather in Milwaukee?
It's actually better than I expected. It's not too cold. We were in Minneapolis last night, expecting that to be freezing, but it wasn't bad either. Catching some all right stuff.
Now, is it true that you guys are in the midst of a six-month tour?
No. I mean, this specific tour that we're on with Blitz and Trapper is just a six-week, but I mean, we've been out for the majority of the last few years, so I mean, you could call it a six-month. I don't think that would be a lie, you know?
or is it more like the Bob Dylan never-ending tour?
Yeah, that seems to be more what it feels like, but in a good way.
Cool. Now, you are the bass player for Dawes, and you were also in Simon Dawes, which was the band that kind of that Dawes sprang out of. So you must have been a kid when you first started.
Yeah.
How did
In Simon Dawes, I was a 16-year-old. I was still in like 11th grade of high school, and we started going on tour, and I dropped out of school and stayed on tour for a few years with that band till it broke up, and then me and Taylor were living together in the house that Simon Dawes had. You know, it's like our band house we rehearsed in, and we were kind of the only two left in it, and then we started inviting Griffin over, who's Taylor's little brother, and that's how this band kind of started, just in that same house in North Hills, California.
What, did you ever go back and get your GED?
No, I never have. Unfortunately, that was kind of I told all my teachers and my parents, you know, at the time. I was like, don't worry, just let me go on tour. I'll go get the GED as soon as I get some time off. And now, years later, I still have yet to get it. So.
Well, I guess you're happy you haven't had the time off. I mean, that's pretty...
Yeah, exactly.
Was there a gap between Simon Dawes and Dawes, or was it just sort of this automatic thing where it was almost like just a name change and boom?
Yeah, it was pretty seamless. I mean, a few of the early Dawes songs were, you know, late Simon Dawes songs, and so that kind of worked out well. The song Bedside Manor that's on our first record was a song we used to play in a Simon Dawes set, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then pretty much as soon as Simon Dawes broke up, almost the next day after a tour we had just got off, Taylor played a show just with an acoustic guitar, like literally the next day in L.A. That was kind of like what could be considered the first of, like, you know, Dawes songs being played.
Mm-hmm.
And then pretty soon after that, we just started arranging them. And our first couple, we had a residency at this place called Hotel Cafe in Los Angeles. It's like a very small kind of like singer-songwriter-y sit-down, like, fancy bar, you know, and we played there. And we were trying out the fourth members. We were looking around. We had a bunch of people playing guitar with us, and we were doing a thing where every Monday we'd play with a new member, you know what I mean? So we could try out a fourth guy. And then the last show we ended up just playing as a three-piece, and that's where we met our piano player, Tay. He was just at the show. He came with a friend, and we talked to him afterwards. He was like, yeah, you know, I'd love to play music. And he came over to our house like the next day. We rehearsed, and he was in the band.
Wow. And when are there landmarks? Are there signposts of, like, marking the progress of the band in the sense of, you know, your times when you've been in Dawes and you knew, oh, we've just hit another level, either of fame or accomplishment or the quality of the music. Can you point to any roadmaps along the way where you said, oh, we must have just hit a new level here?
Yeah, I mean, it was great. I mean, when we first started, obviously, we were just doing, like, fucking demos and stuff like that. And then we met our producer, Jonathan Wilson. We got to do a full record with him, which was really awesome. So that was, like, a big thing at the time. And that was before we had a label or management or anything like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then we slowly added on. We got a booking agent, which is a pretty big deal at the time to us. And he got us out on our first tour, which is also like a pretty big landmark as a band, you know. We did that tour, and by the end of that tour, we met the guys from our label who were represented a band that was on the tour as well with us, and they came out, and then we ended up signing with them. So that whole first tour and like the few months leading up to that were kind of like a lot of the major like initial landmarks, you know.
Cool. And have you guys played to very, very large houses? That doesn't necessarily mean a higher level of anything, maybe, you know, but have you done the 2,000 seat, the 5,000, the 10, or do you always keep it small?
We've played them opening up for people. I mean, when we play our own shows, the largest are, like, we did Minneapolis last night, and it was sold out to, like, 1,500 people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then, but, I mean, we've also played opening up for tons of people. Like, we played with Allison Krauss that, you know, sold out at Red Rocks and all these crazy tours that we've gotten to do opening up. But, I mean, it's always a little nicer when you just play your own personal audience, even if it's a little smaller, you know?
Right, and one of the nice things about the band is that you mix this old-fashioned way of keeping it small and in a room with your regular instruments, but you also accept the modern age by having a very well-kept MySpace page, and you know, you're also out there on the internet where people are listening too. I mean, is that ever that whole analog aesthetic? I assume all of you guys agree on that, and keeping it really stripped down and not a lot of overdubs and not a lot of, you know, electronic stuff. Do you think that'll ever change, or is that the basic aesthetic of Dawes?
I mean, I think we all really enjoy recording like that because it kind of leads to, like, a mindset that we like in the studio, just kind of, like, not coming up with things that you're not going to be able to recreate in a live setting, you know?
Hmm.
And so that aspect of it is really nice. I mean, we're obviously all open-minded individuals, and you know, who knows where records are going to go years and years from now in the studio, but I mean, overall, I think we do like to keep it, you know, relatively in that vein for the reasons of how it affects performance, how it affects, you know, the process. It doesn't end up taking 6 months to record a record when you go in and decide you're not going to do a bunch of crazy things. You can get a record done in a month or 2 weeks, you know.
And the label allows you and your management to understand that aesthetic, and they're not pushing you to be something that you're not.
Yeah, exactly, which is great for us because we got to do our first record, you know, before we met the management or the label. So it's kind of a nicer idea because you meet them and you're like, all right, this is what I like to do. You either like it or you don't. And if you do like it, we can work together, but you know what you're getting. And if you know what I mean? If you don't, we don't have to work together. But it's never like, yeah, we should work with you. And then when it comes time to make a record, it's like, all right, let's talk about what kind of record we're going to make. Yeah. It's like, we kind of know that on our own. You know, we don't need a label or anyone like that, like, trying to help us figure that part of the ordeal out, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm curious about the whole process, because Taylor Goldsmith is the main sort of singer-songwriter of the band. And is it always, he writes a song, he brings it to you all, and you work on it? Or is it sometimes more collaborative in the early stages? What is the general way it works?
Usually he writes them just on an acoustic guitar, and they're, you know, like, just however they sound on that, you know, very unarranged, and it could be a really slow song, could end up being a really fast song or something like that, and then he brings it to us, and we just kind of toy with it for however long it takes. A lot of times, you know, the first arrangement we get to is the one we end up using, and other times it could take a month, you know, different arrangements we keep trying and then scratching and fixing, you know. So it's all, I mean, he writes them all, we arrange them all, but the way that it ends up working out for each song is kind of like a case-by-case basis, you know.
And are you willing to bring in, or especially, and even though it's this whole stripped-down thing, if at some point it becomes a little wider and you need more coloration, you're not averse to bringing in a Glockenspiel player or something like that if it's going to work?
No, not at all. Exactly. That stuff sounds cool to us, you know.
Now, everybody, and it's impossible not to point to the band when talking about Dawes. One assumes that's a major, major influence on your music. But are there other groups and people that really help form the aesthetic of what you guys do?
Yeah, I mean, we all like to listen to, I mean, obviously we are all huge fans of the band, and then, I mean, we listen to all sorts of stuff, all the stuff you would think that we probably do, you know, all the older stuff. I listen to a lot of soul, like New Orleans kind of music, you know, just to work on, you know, bass related things. Taylor listens to a lot of folkier country kind of stuff, you know, for songwriting, and everyone just kind of like brings, you know, you listen for your instrument, you know, and the music that you like, and so whatever you take out of that, and we all kind of bring it together, and that helps, you know, make the whatever sound it is that we have, you know, of an original sound. It's like we got piano influences from whatever Tay is listening to, drum influences from Griff, you know, so it's like everyone's music choice is kind of changing, and just depending on what they're, you know, what they're craving at the time, you know.
And so your bass, who are the bass players that you kind of learn from and try to emulate, and like who, the bass player for Alan Toussaint's band, for example, or are there particular people?
Yeah, a few of my favorites. I like this guy, Willie Weeks, a lot, who plays on, used to play with Donny Hathaway and Aretha Franklin for a long time, and then Duck Dunn, obviously, from, like, the Stax band, Booker T and the MGs, and then George Porter Jr. from, like, the Meters and all the Alan Toussaint, kind of Lee Dorsey stuff from New Orleans, and that's kind of where I'm coming from.
Cool. We are talking, by the way, with Wiley Gilber of the band Dawes. They have a new album out, and it's called Nothing Is Wrong. And if you want to do right by them, come see them November 7th. That's this Monday at the Fox Theater in Boulder. They're on a bill with Blitz and Trapper as well. And got a couple more minutes with us, Wiley?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, great. Wonderful. Super. Wanted to ask, and this is kind of a, you know, your band, even though there are two brothers in the band and really together all the time, always traveling, how do you... And certainly, how do the Goldsmith brothers keep from turning into what happened to the Kinks or what happened to Oasis? I mean, what happens when there's a disagreement between brothers?
Yeah, I mean, they happen to do pretty well. I mean, I know from my experience with my own brother in life, I don't know if I would be as able to maintain this thing as long as they have, but they do it well. I mean, we just kind of like, I mean, we've all known each other for so long, it's like they're just a little bit more brothers than any of us are, you know what I mean? It's like an argument in a band, it's just kind of like you just can never let it get to, they're never going to be anything too serious really, unless someone's really doing something screwed up to another guy. So it's generally just on, you know, musical taste, and we just try to work everything out till everyone's on the same page, you know, and never like end an argument being like, this is the way I like it, this is the way I like it, we're going to choose one of these. It's like, let's figure out, you know, where all four people are on board with the same idea, you know.
Right. So it's not going to be like that Metallica documentary where the only way to get people in a room is with their therapist. You know, you don't see that happening.
Maybe in 30 years from now, but not anytime soon yet.
Let me ask, since we mentioned the band before and bands like that, you guys have played with Robbie Robertson, I think.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Taylor ended up singing background vocals on a record of Robbie's, his recent one in L.A., and then When Robbie decided he was going to go out and do some TV shows, he was just looking for a band, and he remembered Taylor. Remember Taylor had a band. I guess he just kind of looked up some videos of the band and chose us to do it, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Honor. I mean, I think he was looking, which is cool, you know, for a band that was an actual band to begin with. So you hire, like, a unit as opposed to hiring a bunch of individual players, you know, to kind of, like, compete with each other. He wanted to get a bunch of people that, like, he could learn a song as a unit, you know?
Hmm. Very nice. Can I ask if you've met other idols and famous people of yours and, you know, stood there going, oh, my God, I'm shaking hands with so-and-so?
Yeah.
Well, who?
Well, we did these shows recently with Jackson Browne that were pretty unbelievable at his band.
Wow.
And he took us to Spain, and we were playing, you know, like kind of like a greatest hits, like Jackson Browne said, as well as opening up the shows. So that, I mean, that one was pretty unbelievable. Those were like long shows, like running on empty, Take It Easy, These Days, you know, like every song you would like to hear in that set we were playing, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, sure is. And was he, you know, kind of, you heard all sorts of different things about Jackson Browne. What was he like?
He's like, couldn't be sweeter, more 100% still together, smart, great sounding musician ever that I've ever met. You know, of all the older guys you meet, like, oh, you imagine meeting this guy like in his prime, you know, it'd be so awesome. It's like, I feel like it's no different for him now than it was 30 years ago. He sounds great. He's like super nice, smart guy, knows exactly what he wants musically, which is cool, you know, and but it's still, let make sure that whoever he's playing with, like, gets to express themselves on the instrument, you know.
Well, that's kind of ideal. What about some other? You said you opened for Alison Krauss, other folks like that.
Yeah, I try to think who else. I mean, those are two main ones. We just confirmed we're playing the Ramble at Levon Helm's house in a couple weeks,
oh,
which should be
wow.
great.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so we're going to go up and do that, and I think Jackson may be around for that, hopefully, come hang out and get those guys together. And then, so meeting Levon's going to be, should be amazing. And then we're playing a show in New York for a radio station where we're the opener, and then the headliner is Mavis Staples coming up.
Wow.
Which should be awesome.
Amazing stuff. I mean, it gets more and more exciting as you go. Let me ask about the idea of having a new album and then trying to push and promote it in this day and age. It's not, I mean, it's 2011, almost 12, so it isn't like the old days of just, you know, they go to the radio station, they give them a bribe, they try and get it on the radio, and that's that. I mean, it's so different. What do they ask you guys to do, apart from touring, in order to get your new record, Nothing Is Wrong, out there?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, internet-related stuff. I know the label, and we have, like, you know, there's promotion companies, and we have a publicist and all that. But as far as when we're still on the road, I mean, we still end up doing tons of radio-related stuff. And as surprising as it is, that stuff still is very effective and, like, weird, and you wouldn't really think so in this day and age, but, I mean, we go in and play radio stations and do interviews and play sets in there, you know, a few times a week at least, it seems like, in certain cities like Minneapolis, you know, that have really great radio stations that kind of control the whole town's ears, you know, like, it ends up working out great for us, and those towns, it really does make the difference in terms of, you know, record sales and attendance at the shows, and so... It's still kind of like, I mean, I don't think it's as effective as it once was, but the way that we're going about it is still not really far from how it always has been, you know?
It's still a global village with the emphasis on the word village, you know?
Then
will you be doing videos for any of the songs on the new record, like the Los Angeles?
Yeah, there's a video for Time Spent in Los Angeles that this guy Sam Jones made. In mm-hmm. school, it's been playing. We actually got it recently on VH1, so it's been playing on VH1 all the time. I guess it's on, like, the top 20 countdown and all that kind of stuff.
Great.
Which is cool, and then just kind of waiting to figure out what the next video would be. We got to figure out, you know, whatever the next, like, single, quote-unquote, is going to be, and, you know, if that's determining what kind of video we're going to make, and, you know, which song it's for, obviously.
Cool. And again, in the process of touring and being on the road, how does that work out as far as time to rehearse new stuff and work together, whereas just of sheer traveling and sheer doing the actual show and then coming down from the show? How does that time-wise work out?
I mean, it's definitely tough. I know it's tough for Taylor to be able to write songs on tour, but as soon as the songs are written, the best rehearsals for us are just to be able to throw new songs into the set, you know, and just play them every night. And that's how the whole, you know, Nothing Is Wrong was all, like, essentially arranged. You know, we had a bunch of songs, then we went on tour for a long time. We just played them all, so when we got time to record it, it wasn't, like, really a big deal. It was like, all right, we've been playing these songs, you know, every night for 6 months, so let's just get in there and do it. So we're going to have a little time off coming up soon and, you know, try hopefully get some more songs written, and then next time we go out to hit the road, like, that's the rehearsals, you know, we just throw them into the set and see what happens, kind of.
And speaking of the road and some of the previous interviews with you, you invariably end up mentioning the van. How's your van working out?
Well, this is actually the first tour right now that we're on a tour bus for the first time. So. The van was not working out. I mean, the van obviously worked out great for us, but we hit like 300 plus miles, you know, 1,000 miles on it on the last tour, and me and Taylor had bought it new back with our old van, so it was like, if we were to go on this tour, we didn't think we could even bring our own van. We would have had to rent a van because ours breaks down all the time nowadays. But yeah, the tour bus is a whole other ball game. It's blowing our minds. You know, the amount of you can actually get a night's sleep. You know, and it really helps out the shows and everyone's kind of like overall mental calmness. You know,
right? Has speaking of the shows and mental calmness, anything really crazy or weird happen, you know, because you're on the road, either with fans or after the show or before? Do tell.
Yeah, I mean, this tour's been pretty tame. It's just been, like, good shows, and, you know, we're all just kind of, like, taking it easy in a good way. I mean, it's good. We we want it that way. You know, it's like we've been just kind of like, well, for what I was saying, we're about to have some time off after this for a little while, and so this is kind of like the last, you know, bigger tour that we were going to do, like co-headliner and stuff. And so, I mean, this is how we like it. We're not probably the most exciting, you know, post or pre-show band. We just like to hang out and, you know, play good shows, and that's like the most fun for us, you know.
And how does that affect your guys' personal lives, being on the road so much? I don't know if you're married or if you're cohabiting or what your situation is.
No, I mean, it's definitely tough for that. I mean, right now, one of us has or two of us have girlfriends, me not included, but I mean, it is tough. It's like we're not really home long enough to meet anyone, you know, or ever hang out. And if you do, it's like an ordeal in order to hang out with that person. You know, it's a series of flying to see them, or them flying out to come see you, and it's like, it's tough. But I mean, there's musicians have been doing it for years and years, so it is possible, you know.
And the undertone of all that, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, is girls, he's single.
Yeah.
I mean, is that great? Is that wonderful, being in a band that's really rising and getting pretty popular and being able to go to cities unencumbered and whatever? Or are you more of an ascetic as far as that goes?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, the grass is always greener on both sides. But, I mean, it is nice. I mean, it's like, I can imagine, you know, being in a relationship with anyone is going to be just as tough on them as it is on me. It's like I'd be gone most of the time anyway. So, I mean, it is nice when you're traveling this much to not worry about having to, like, you know, offend someone and not call them back or something. Because, I mean, when you're out on tour for a long time, what you can kind of only learn by doing it is, like, you know, you can lose track of the days and, like, the hours. And, like, you don't talk to people for 3 months, and then you, in your mind, you think you haven't spoken to them in just, like, a few days, but then you call them up, and they're like, where the hell have you been, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I get that. When you get so busy or into a situation, and you don't really look, you know, the calendar doesn't mean anything. It's like, if this is Tuesday.
Yeah, and you're seeing a new city and a new venue every single night, and it's not like you get a real sense of, like, you know, the days passing by, because every day is going to be completely different than the one before it. It's not like you get to watch the, you know, the leaves change on the tree outside your house or something.
Do you at least, when you go to play foreign countries and new places, do you have a bit of time to explore and go to walk down the streets and see museums or take in the culture? Or is it like,
yeah,
get there and
try to?
Yeah.
I mean, in the van, you know, there's really no time at all to do that. You're generally late everywhere you're going, and you pull up and you kind of load in and play. And the bus really helps out for that kind of stuff. You know, you can bring, the bus pulls up to the venue normally at, you know, 8, 9 in the morning, and then you don't have to do anything until 3 in the afternoon. So you can actually have a day to, like, go out and, you know, see the city and go.
Well, that's cool.
Kind of cool stuff that you're trying to do, which is great. So we're just kind of getting in that mindset now, because it's, you know, so foreign to us before this tour, but it's cool.
Well, it has been tremendously cool talking to Wiley Gilber of the band Dawes. Dawes is going to be at the Fox Theater in Boulder, Colorado, on Monday night. They're on a double bill with Blitz and Trapper. Also, everybody, please get their new album, Nothing Is Wrong, not to mention their previous album, North Hills, available in all the usual places you can get music. And, of course, check out their website, DawesTheBand.com. Well, my last question for Wiley Gilber is, so what are your hopes for the next couple of years? Where do you see the band going? Where do you want it to go?
I mean, I think we'd like to get, I mean, you know, we're of the mindset we'd like it to get as big as it can, you know, without having to do anything that, you know, we wouldn't be proud of, you know, looking back on as the years go by. So, I mean, hopefully it just keeps kind of doing what it's doing at this pace or a faster one, and just growing and growing, shows get bigger, you know, and then just get to travel more, you know, and like, build up the crew, build up, you know, the records and all that kind of stuff, just like the regular band goal, I guess, you know.
All right. Well, all I can hope for is more great music from you four guys. So thank you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry?
I said thank you, yeah.
Thanks so much, Wiley Gilber, for being a guest on Dave's Gone By. Best of luck in Colorado. Best of luck in this whole tour that you're doing and pushing this new record. Good luck, and thanks so much again.
Right on. I'll talk to you soon, Dave.
You betcha. Bye-bye now.
Bye.